Hey, it's a series win. Nobody cares how. All they care about is how many. Welcome to Brewers Weekly. I'm Dominic Catronio. If you're here on YouTube on Friday morning, thanks for being here. If you're listening on Thursday night, remember, these are all taped, and they are meant to be digested in either podcast form or over on the YouTube page where we actually can see the people that we're talking to today. You're going to hear from Pat Murphy. You're going to hear from Brandon Sproat here right off the top. We're also going to hear from Trevor McGill. We're going to break down both Brandon Sproat and Trevor McGill, the differences for them between their last couple of outings, what's gone wrong for Trevor McGill, what went right for Brandon Sproat in Thursday's win against the Blue Jays. And then finally, I want to point out the bullpen issues and what is actually at play here, what is on the horizon for the crew, using the off days to their advantage, switching Kyle Harrison back. But what does all this mean for the bullpen? And then I want to point out an underrated start that I think we've kind of gone unnoticed that we need to make sure we point out at how strong William Contreras has been playing out of his mind lately. And we'll explain some of the other numbers below the surface as to why I'm really a fan of William Contreras right now. But with today's 2-1 victory, with the bunts becoming back in vogue, that is the first question to Pat Murphy you'll hear shortly. Here is the full press conference with Pat Murphy and the media after a series victory over the Toronto Blue Jays.
What's your sense of the importance of the bunt right now in baseball? We saw it on both sides today.
I think it's coming back. You know, I think it's obviously a very difficult thing for a pitcher to do his job the way we do it today, and there's a lot of really big men pitching, and then to have to run, break down, secure the baseball, get your eyes on the target, and make a good throw with that type of adrenaline and that type of movement. I'm the guy running first. I guess legit, we've done it for the last couple of years. You've seen it. Mm-hmm. Not always successful, but the threat of the thought then becomes a defense and positioning thing, too.
Murph, Joey struggled with laying down bunts last year. Have you seen him get better at that?
He's working at it. Joey's working at everything, man. He's, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to find a shortstop that's any better than him defensively. I mean, really, he's really, I know the numbers may not say that, but the players ask any one of them. This kid is, and he's working at every part of his game. And today he walked. Yesterday he had a knock. Today he walked and got down a huge bunt. And the defense he plays is, you know, really good. So that was great. Jerry Sanchez swinging the bat. How about Sproat, though? That's what you're even about to ask right now here, aren't you? Just about to ask about that, weren't you?
I was about to ask about Trevor, but sure.
Sproat's talking about Sproat for you now. It was good. 6.2, you know, some of the players he gets today, it was good. He just feel great about it.
Do you see adjustments from Sproat from start to start? What are you seeing that's different from maybe the first guy?
Offense is number one. It all starts with, I mean, they're not going to change the mechanics that much. And that mechanical change doesn't mean you could, it might be the right mechanical change, but it doesn't mean you can execute it right now. These are, again, these are humans. And they've endured it a certain way a long time. So all of a sudden, he asked them to do something. It's kind of tougher than you think. That, oh, I'll just move my finger, or I'll just do this. Doesn't necessarily result in a total different outcome. But his confidence and belief and the way William wrote him today, he wrote him. And if you guys who follow this game closely, you know what that feels like. Like when you see a catcher riding, and he did a tremendous job for Sproat and got him going. And that's why we caught Gary last night and William today, because we wanted William Sproat to get because of William those hunter. You know, he's the guy that's going to catch most of the games. And, you know, he knew Sproat's stuff, and he did a great job with it. I'm really happy for Sproat feeling like, yeah, I can do this.
What was the discussion for the seventh inning? You know, obviously 75 pitches, but you got out of the frame. Did you want to give him it?
He hadn't been up seven times, you know what I mean? And that's really tough on a young kid, the adrenaline, 12 o'clock game. It isn't about a number of pitches. Mm-hmm. The inning before, he gave up 2 hard contacts. And then we told him, you're going to hit the first 2 hitters. We were going to bring him back out with a long layoff. We said, look, if it isn't too long here, give you the first two hitters. We told him that you got the first two hitters. That's it. Because I got it. So you tell him that you can't give him that next hitter, you know? So Ash came in and came out the swinging vacuum. Got a lot.
Could she concerning that the selection was a lot different for Sproat? Is that him? Is that the pitching guys? Is it
really William? That's William and the combination are talking to the game planning with the pitcher, yes.
Or how about overall is the amount of outs you've gotten from your starters here recently? May it be?
Yeah, there's two guys and two really young pitchers. And all three starters with the youth we have, I'm pleased with that. The bullpen was better the last 2 days. Keep going. We got a lot of guys in there today a lot of people don't know who they are. And, you know, it's good to kind of switch your lineup up sometimes and give guys a chance. You know, Greg Jones went in there. It was really, he's a fill-in because of the injury, and all of a sudden he's in there doing a good job. Hamilton had two miserable bats, came back and had a huge one right back. That's what I'm looking for, that resiliency. That's who we have to be, you know. Contreras had a great game offensively, defensively, terrain, big knock, but there's more to it. You know what I mean? It can't just be those guys all the time. You got to play the game right.
Murph, I know Rendifo was in the game the entire game at first base, but what were your impressions of how he handled himself?
Don't worry about it. He's a baseball player. He can do it. He's been in the infield a lot. He's got a lot of major league experience. He's been working there for about a month. And, yeah, I think you can see people that know how to, it doesn't spook them to do it, you know. And with the work he's put in with Erickson, I feel comfortable putting it in.
What about the ovation for Miguel?
Were you? I didn't hear it. I was trying to read his lips over there when he was supporting at the other team.
What were you reading lips up on the other team? What were they?
So I was trying to read Trevor's lips and what he was screaming at the other team.
Do you know what the other team was screaming at him?
Well, he wiped off the ball in the mound or something like that and made exception. There's a lot of emotion in Trevor right now, understandably so. He cares a great deal about this ball club and about his teammates. He's not the first one to not say something, err on the side of saying something. So I think they understood the situation. I'm happy for Trevor the way he responded.
You know, he was super proud of Sproat. Obviously, he was excited to talk about him. And when we went in to talk to Brandon, he certainly felt like, I felt that this is a guy that's starting to realize, I have stuff that plays in the big leagues, right? When you get Vlad Jr. to strike out twice, you've got stuff. When you're able to get weak flyouts and the only run that scored against him was a sacrifice bunt, you know, a safety squeeze, if you will, I really think that Sproat, like you heard Murph say, that confidence is going to only grow for him moving forward. And he was asked about that as well. Sproat, after a no decision today, but working a career high 6 2/3 innings with 6 strikeouts against the Toronto Blue Jays.
Brandon, just what was the biggest difference for you to have that kind of command?
Just taking one pitch at a time, to be honest with you. Not going out there and just, you know, doing the best I can, you know, hopefully the team comes out on top. And just, you know, not worrying about results, just playing freely, like Murph's talked about to us. That was just my biggest mindset today. So,
what was the work with William? You know, it felt like you guys are on a really good page in today's game with the game planning and sequencing. Did you see a difference?
I think the biggest thing was just, hey, just keep the rhythm up, you know, just get the ball and go. Don't think about anything else, you know, just attack. I think we did a really good job of that today.
Brandon, how bad did you want to finish that seventh?
pretty bad. You know, I'm not, in my opinion, I'm not in the, you know, I guess, how do I want to put it? I guess it's not my time to fight Murph about that right now. But no, I definitely wanted to finish that seventh. But, you know, I trust the bullpen behind me. I trust his decision. You know, Ash came in, did his job.
Murphy was saying that your confidence might be up at this point. What does that mean for you on the mound?
Just that I'm capable. I'm capable of going out there, you know, and, you know, making good pitches, capable of going out there and getting a ground ball when needed. Just going out there and just giving it my all. That was that was the big word that, you know, he told me today. He's like, hey, you know, you're more than capable. And so, you know, hearing that from him has definitely boosted the confidence.
You saw both sides bunting play the big game.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Are you like on higher alert with, it seems like teams are really embracing this strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I know growing up playing the game, you know, small ball was always huge. And I mean, you get to the big leagues and you know, you don't really see too much of it, but it still works. I mean, the eighth inning with the three bunts there was awesome to see. You know, that's just, there's multiple ways in this game to get runs to come across, and bunting is one of them. I mean, as you saw in the eighth inning there. So, I mean, you know, props to those guys, you know, for doing their job, you know, in the eighth inning. You know, that was fun to watch.
So the working kind of speaking, you kind of helped with your confidence, being told that you're more than capable. How close does it help to actually then reinforce that with an outing like today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he told me it after the outing, you know. He's like, hey, man, you know, you went out there and, you know, you played freely as, you know, like that's what we've talked about. And, you know, told me great job. And he's like, hey, man, you know, hey, you're more than capable, as, you know, as you can see from that outing right there. So, yeah, you know, with the words of encouragement, you know, it's always nice to hear. But, yeah, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's definitely a confidence booster.
So there's some interviews. Let's actually dive into some of the numbers with Brandon Sproat. Then a little bit in a moment, we'll also dive into the numbers with Trevor McGill and hear from him in postgame as well, what was going on with the shouting match between the two. So just getting started here with Brewers Weekly on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. Welcome back. Brandon Sproat, what actually went right? What do we need to talk about and point out what went well and what was different about today's start, given how much Pat Murphy was praising William Contreras? And a reminder, this was only the second time they got to work together in a live game. And that even goes back to spring training. I think I mentioned this on a postgame show previously, but if I haven't, I'll say it again here, is the fact that William being gone for the WBC, he only got to work with Brandon Sproat on the backfield and in live ABs, not necessarily in game atmosphere. And even spring training is not quite a game atmosphere. But what I thought I really enjoyed out of William today, and from a sequencing and a pitch calling perspective, is understanding what was working and doing things differently. First thing that jumps out is the cutter usage. 32% on the cutter versus the rest of his offerings, the most he's ever thrown the cutter. Now, again, part of this has to do with the lineups he's facing and a team that is so swing happy, and how swing happy they were yesterday against Chad Patrick. That certainly helps in the scouting report say, hey, let's keep throwing cutters until they make the adjustment. And they did not make the adjustment. He 33% of them to righties, even 30% of them to lefties. He only faced three lefties in the order today. 13 swings on the pitch. Only two whiffs, but enough to get six batted balls. Only one of them was a hit. 75% for a strike. And he started using it less and less as the game went on. As you can see over here by the usage, third time through, it was down to 25%. Granted, he only faced a handful of batters the third time through. The other thing that jumps out to me about today's start versus previous starts here is just scrap the changeup. Didn't throw a single changeup in today's game. And in his previous three outings, he had thrown at least one changeup. In fact, 11 his last go about. And then even 5 against the Royals and 8 against the White Sox, and wasn't getting any results. And Williams said, to heck with it. We don't need you to throw a changeup today. And part of that is due to the lack of lefties in the order. And then finally, the other big thing that I'm going to note here is the breaking balls, of that how much he was using his breaking ball versus the rest of his pitches. So his last outing, he had 21% breaking balls. And then in his first outing, he threw 31% breaking balls. But that was like second time through the order. It was kind of too little too late. He was barely using his breaking ball the first time through the order. And then when he finally did, he hung one to Colson Montgomery, and it ended up being a grand slam. You know, seeing the sweeper take center stage in today's game, I thought was really important. 20% sweeper, 13% breaking ball. So that's 33%, which is further than what it's been, or higher than what it's been for any of his previous starts. Getting that going in the right direction, too. I pull up his pitch chart here and his pitch movement scatter plot. Look at how clustered all of these pitches are to their own. Now, they could be a little tighter, of course, but notice there is separation of all of these, and you can tunnel a four-seamer with a sinker, with a cutter, and then fool him with the sweeper. The sweeper doesn't have the craziest amount of break that you've ever seen comparatively to other sweepers in the world. You know, his horizontal break averaged today about 12 inches horizontal with the sweeper, but then 16 inches paired that with the sinker. So now let me tunnel these two together here, and you can see the difference of, okay, even if it's not the nastiest 16-inch sweeper, he can still keep them honest because he has so much natural arm side run, as you can see on the fastball plot, that he's able to really have righties guessing on which way this is going to turn. He is not a north-south pitcher. And I think William Contreras caught on to that today and to make sure that he was going to be successful using the east-west to the best of his ability to say, keep him out front, keep him looking away, 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 then we're going to jam him inside with a sinker. It wasn't like he was breaking a ton of bats, but he was keeping them honest given how early they were swinging. How many, I mean, that second inning, right, where he had six pitches, all of them were swung at, and he got out of the inning, one, two, three. Him and William caught on to that, saying, let's just keep them off the scent of the four-seamer. The reason why the four-seamer isn't that important of a pitch, you may think, like, wow, he throws 98. He should throw more straight fastballs. Well, the performance isn't quite there. When you look at this pitch plot here, this is nearing what we call the dead zone. Now, he has enough arm side movement to keep batters honest, but it can't just rely on velocity from where he's throwing from, because generally you want to be exceptional in one direction or another, right? Do you want to be up toward the top where you're having high ride, high vert, and guys that have freakish carry fastballs like Dylan Cease on Wednesday night, or Sproat, whose four-seamer can naturally lean a little bit more arm side? I'm not saying it's fully a dead zone fastball, but he does get enough arm side for it to be consistent, and he gets enough separation from his sinker that's really moving arm side. I mean, 16, 17, 18 inches in the entire width of the plate on the sinker arm side movement, and that in part is thanks to his arm slot, given it is so flat at 33 degrees. That is a very easy, natural thing for him to do, to have that ball tail to his arm side and really make it hard on righties. That's the number one pitch I'm excited to watch him develop and really trust. I think by the end of the year, the four-seam fastball could be completely eliminated or virtually eliminated, kind of like Quinn Priester last year. And I know it's an easy comp to make given how much Quinn struggled in his first few starts as a Brewer to then ultimately what he became. It's an easy comp, obviously, with Brandon Sproat. But you can't sit here and watch this start today, regardless of how many injuries the Blue Jays lineup has, and tell me that dude's not a big league pitcher. He's absolutely a big league pitcher. He can handle this job. He can handle being able to, you know, face a lineup multiple times. He has multiple weapons for multiple times through the order. He has weapons for left-handed hitters, too. And I think that when you give him his confidence back, when you give him the belief that he can handle this, more opportunities will come his way. Now, as you look ahead and when you look at the schedule right now for the Brewers, off day on Monday, Kyle Harrison will probably start on Tuesday since he's not going to start against Miami over the weekend while dealing with his sore wrist. So ideally, you would probably have Brandon Sproat line up again against the Tigers maybe on Wednesday, maybe on Thursday a week from today, using the off day as an extra day. It's TBD for Friday. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, you know who's starting that game. It could be a Coleman Crowe or a Shane Drouin or something of that kind, somebody getting called up. But the point being, Sproat is going to get a little bit of run now in this rotation because you look up ahead now. Once you get past Wednesday, Thursday, whenever he throws next for the against the Tigers, there's another off day the following Monday. So he can kind of get in this rhythm, and then there's another off day on May the 7th. So there's at least one off day each of the next 5 weeks. In fact, 6 weeks if you go all the way to the end of May. So he's going to have to give himself a little bit of a routine, give himself a chance to work between innings and or work between outings where it's just finally, hey, let's refine this sinker command. Let's refine this cutter command and not just totally say, let's build you up. Now you're getting to that fun part of the season where let's actually craft some things and have some data to react upon to say, this needs work, this can be improved, let's maintain this. That's what this next three-week stretch is going to be for Brandon Sproat, because you've got at least that amount of time for Quinn Priester to build back up since he's essentially restarting his spring training. He's hoping to start a rehab assignment maybe next week. That's a 30-day clock for starting pitchers. So then that's probably the clock that you're going to be monitoring for Brandon Sproat moving forward. I really like what we saw from him. I hope Brewers fans see that as well, because there's plenty to be encouraged by from the Sprout Groat, and great to see him get a career high in innings pitched, one shy of a career high in strikeouts. He did his job today, and he did it very, very well. Another guy that did his job today that we're going to talk about next, Trevor Megill. Man, good to see him get back on the horse, get back on right track, and there were some fireworks there in the middle of it too. He explains that on the other side of the break. You heard Pat Murphy talk about it, but let's break down what went right for Trevor Megill and what we need to monitor for the rest of the season to make sure that he gets back to himself, because the Brewers cannot survive this season without a sustained, healthy Trevor Megill. Let's break him down next here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. Okay, Trevor Megill got the eighth inning today in the Brewers' victory, maintaining a 2-1 lead. He gets credit for a hold, not a save. Angel Serpa gets the save in this 2-1 victory, and Aaron Ashby gets his fifth win of the season. That's pretty wild. Fastest to five wins in franchise history. Maybe, like we talked about in Wednesday night's postgame show, if Ashby gets the 20 wins as a reliever, he could be the guy that kills the win as we know it. Now, before we hear from Trevor, it's a short interview with Trevor, as it usually is, but I want to break down the at-bat with David Schneider, because I thought, first of all, this was great to see him start to fight through it, but there are some things with the curveball that I'm noticing. And Kurt Hoag wrote a great piece over the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about the lack of fastball swing and miss. First and foremost, a lot of that is location-based right now, and I think that when you look at Trevor Megill's heat map, right now, this season, coming into the day, there's a big red dot right down the middle. You're not going to get whiffs right down the middle, no matter how hard you throw, unless maybe you're Mason Miller, I guess. But look, 98 and 104 are very different, and Trevor Megill was right down the middle a lot. Now, he had some better locations today. The curve is still a little bit different. Let me explain what I mean by that in a moment. Let me just kind of let seeing is believing here as we dive into pitch by pitch, the great at-bat with Davis Schneider. First pitch with Schneider, right on right, nobody on, is a breaking ball that he got around. And it moved more glove side than he anticipated. Not a great one, but he needs to land that curveball as soon as possible. And he talks about this in a moment, about getting ahead in counts. And getting into better counts is going to let his stuff play better. Already this season, teams are, when you put the first pitch in play against him, are 3-for-3 with a sack bunt. Now, one of those bunts, of course, was the error, and he threw it away against the Nats on Friday. But when they swing at the first pitch, they're 3-for-3. So the curveball landing is super important, and not hanking it is never important. Number two, the other thing that I point out on these splits coming into today, once again, after a 1-0 count, after missing with strike one, the batting average isn't anything crazy, but the on-base is .550. Three walks after a 1-0. That's a red flag of just saying all of his walks have come after missing strike one, right? Because you look at after 0-1, I should say there's only one walk where he has not allowed after missing 0-1. So three out of four walks, three of them come after ball one. That's simply one thing you need to fix. Even you go down one, after a 1-1 count, right? We've talked so much about how important a 1-1 count is for a hitter and for a pitcher. Who wins that count tends to win the battle. And it gets even worse for Trevor Megill coming into today. Opponents were 2-for-6, a 3-walk rate, 2 strikeouts, 600 on base after a 1-1 count. So that's what we're talking about here, trying to get into better counts. But he's behind 1-0 on Davis Schneider after missing with a curveball. But he understands, I got to get back into the zone with the curve. Got a gift, wasn't his best curveball. This new breaking ball at the top of the zone is going to be a thing in the ABS era that sometimes you get away with when it's so bad it's good. 1-1 count, just like we talked about, how important these 1-1 counts are for Trevor Megill. 3 in a row, triples up on the curve. This one was closer to what we've seen from him, but we'll break down the movement in a moment. After tripling up and getting the foul ball, only 35 inches of downward vertical movement, an IVB of virtually zero. And I'll explain what that means in just a moment. But hey, that's huge. You've still got the advantage in the count now at 1-2. He's already gone 4 in a row now with the curve, back to a heater. But if you notice, William was set up away, completely missed his spot. Shake that off, move on now. It is still a 2-2 count with nobody on in a one-run game. Schneider's one job is he's going to take daddy hacks. That is what he does, and he does not chase. He's a very hard guy to strike out with chase. So you got to have your stuff beat him. Fastball, better location. You know, William being set up away, I don't think he wanted it necessarily this much in the zone where it ended up being, but 97 helped it get by Schneider a little bit. And again, the vert was getting closer to normal here for Trevor McGill. That foul ball on the fastball was 19 and a half. That, I mean, that's elite, 20 inches. We've seen McGill at his best pop 21s and 22s. To see him near 20 again, that's an encouraging sign. All right, moving along in this at-bat, still a 2-2 count. He just fouled off a fastball. You give him another, whew, foul ball. Now, again, just like we talked about a couple pitches ago, look where William is setting up. He is setting up away. Where does McGill deliver it? In fast hands to Davis Schneider. He's able to turn on it. He's a little early. Now catch your brain here. How do you think to attack Davis Schneider? He was just late on a fastball away, the pitch prior to this. Now he's early on a fastball in. If you have to think to yourself, you got to go back to the curveball because that means he's keyed in on the fastball. He's late once. He's early the next time. He's sitting heater trying to react to a curveball. And here on the 2-2 pitch, a really good one. Now, location-wise, perfect. You can't do any damage with that pitch. That's a ground ball if they don't swing and miss at it. I don't know how Davis Schneider made contact, quite frankly. Great pitch for Trevor McGill. Now, finally, pitch number 8 of the sequence. It's still 2-2. He's thrown him 4 curveballs now in this at-bat. Coming back to it, curveball bounce one. Okay, waste pitch. Not great. Hung on to it for too long. Now you're in a pickle because you've thrown him back-to-back curveballs. Both of them have been below the zone. He didn't chase this one. He's thinking he's on time with the fastball, but you know you have to go back to the heater. You know you have to go back to your number one. And what does he do? Dot it. Finally. Low and away. Perfect pitch to get Davis Schneider. Similar to what we talked about with that curveball, there is nothing you can do with that pitch if you make contact. Notice, none of these pitches were in the heart of the zone. The fastball command, he doesn't need to be 99, 100 if he's commanding everything else around the edges of the zone. Loved to see that at bat from Trevor McGill. That was a key moment to me to see him get back on track. Now, I want you to hear from Trevor talking about the arguments about what was going on with his belt and rubbing the baseball or whatever. But then I want to show you the difference in movement from last year versus this year.
Trevor, you walking off, there was a lot going on there, but did you hear the ovation? Did you see the ovation?
Yeah, very much appreciated from the Milwaukee crowd, man. It's been a rough last two, and you know that was great to see.
Did you expect that? Did you know what to expect?
No, I just kind of, I mean, we got fired up a little bit from, you know, what happened in the middle of the inning and just kind of, you know, handled business. And when walking off, you know, just felt that energy and, you know, kind of pulling for me from the crowd. So once again, yeah, thank you guys.
What did happen? What were they upset about?
I was rubbing balls on my leg. Somebody on their bench, I think it was Schneider on their bench, was complaining about it. I looked at him, I said, I promise I don't have anything on there. Immediately got used from their bench. So yeah.
Pretty clear.
To then be able to kind of respond and have a clean inning, just kind of, what did that do for you after those last two?
You know, good for me and even better for the team, right? We got a couple more games coming up here before an off day and looking to get rolling.
Trevor, anything different for you out there today other than the results? And did you change anything or is it just...
There's a few adjustments there. But yeah, just a few adjustments and just making better pitches and being in a different count than, you know, 2-0, 2-1 on everybody.
Your manager was talking about how much you care about this team. How do you see your role and kind of your responsibility and leadership with this team?
I mean, it starts with just being a good teammate and, you know, zeros kind of follow that, right? Not really, you know, trying not to get too wrapped up in the role right now. I'm just trying to help the team, you know, get out of this little funk we're in, and I think I did that today.
So Trevor just telling it like he is, as he usually does. Appreciate his candor this week. I mean, it's hard to be a closer in Major League Baseball and then have to face the music and face the media. I said it the other night, he's a professional and I wish him nothing but the best. I'm glad that he hopefully gets over this slump sooner as opposed to later. But we talked about some of the movement, some of the characteristics here of his breaking ball. Let me give you the raw numbers first, okay? Last year, he averaged about 42 inches of vertical drop, which is a good amount. It's not a crazy amount. It's pretty average, but when you combine that being 6 foot seven from his very vertical release, from having 99 in the tank too, it makes that curveball even better. Induced vertical break is interesting to use for a curveball because it's such a north-south pitch. We think of induced vertical break for fastballs and trying to get carry, but you can also do it in the reverse where you're trying to create spin, you're trying to create downward movement, and trying to curveballs are meant to be moving nasty. Okay, they're meant to be spiked. They're meant to be going down. They're not meant to be thrown for strikes generally. Now, sometimes if you snap a curveball too hard, it can pop out of your hands with too much spin. But with a good amount of IVB and if a good finish on the pitch, it still drops that tremendous amount of downward movement, but you're able to disguise it well with the fastball. But IVB is also something we can monitor to saying, is he getting the finish that you expect on the pitch? And vertical drop numbers, I'm not so inclined to think about because sometimes I think a vertical drop can be something that we overlook or I should say put too much stock into of just like, wow, look how many inches he's moving it. On a curveball, I think it's very different. But IVB can tell us a little bit more in that he's got three fewer inches of IVB. What does that actually mean? Well, let me show you here on YouTube of last year's curveballs that are, negative six IVB, really snapping it, getting swings and misses on it, versus the ones that are like zero, that are one, that are two. When you look at the differences here, the first one here, the one from last season, nasty, late, it's bouncing, it's going down. You see it coming, you have to be careful. Like, there's no way this drops below the zone. I have to protect. Versus over here, these are zero IVBs and negative one IVBs where it's just, you see it and it's not fooling anybody. And you're getting foul balls, you're getting comfortable swings, you're getting guys that see it well out of the hand. Now, could this be flexor related? Could this be injury related? Could this just be buildup related? Let's give it some time. But maybe for the time being, if he's not going to be in the closer role, that's going to be the pitch we need to monitor. How much is his curveball moving? He can learn to land it for a strike. He has in the past, but if he's moving it less, he can't rely on it as much as a swing and miss pitch. But if it's a get me over curveball, team's going to catch on to that. We just showed you the numbers when he falls behind 1-0. He needs to make sure he has the complement of both fastball command, like he's had at Davis Schneider there, nothing missing over the heart of the plate, and curveballs that are able to snap below the zone that even if a batter swings and makes contact, damage is not going to be done. If it was that easy, everybody would do it. I'm just a dude talking into a microphone, okay? So I'm cautiously optimistic about what Trevor McGill can produce for the rest of the year. Let's give it the rest of April. We showed you the numbers that he generally adds velocity throughout the season. So let's let him give him the grace and give him the chance to do so. Let's take a quick breather, last break, and let's talk about William Contreras because I think we have not spent enough time appropriately monitoring how great the start to his season has been. Back in a moment here on YouTube, 620 WTMJ, ESPN Milwaukee. Okay, welcome back. Last segment here. William Contreras has been on fire. And I think we've become so used to William playing well that we don't stop, pause. You sometimes forget to look at your own players and understand how great they have been playing to this point in the season. You know, Savant is a little bit tough this time of year when it comes to red and blue and sliders and people overreacting to what they say, but let's just go ahead and take a tour through his Baseball Savant page of things that we like and things that we need to notice about William Contreras. Obviously, we can look at the whiffs and we can look at, whiff rate is well above average, 34 points above league average as far as percentile goes. His chase is great. He's squaring the bat up. Bat speed is good. Walk rate, as we know, is great. We've talked about that before. But how about the caught stealings above average? He had one, in extra innings the other night that I was talking to some of the guys in the video room for the Brewers, Abdel Yeb, shout out. And, you get a free challenge, might as well use it, and it helps out William's stats. And, he's been quietly leading the National League in caught stealings. That's certainly something. And then he got two more challenges right in Thursday's game. So when you go to the leaderboard here for catchers, now this is not updated live. This will be updated at the end of the day. So I don't know if Salvi has any or anything, but William got two more right today. So he's tied for the MLB lead with Salvador Perez and Will Smith for the most correct challenges as a catcher on the ABS system. Now, he's also one of the more frequent ones too, which is impressive given how often he's right. He's got a good win rate. Now, among guys, let me toggle of just how many times minimum of challenges. Let's just go ahead and give it the guys with double-digit challenges here early in the season. To have a win rate, Dylan Dingler leading the way with 82%. That's bonkers. Brewers will see Dylan Dingler Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Detroit. William being at 61%. He's above league average. Catchers are right about 60%. Love what we've seen from him behind the plate. As back to that defensive best catcher in baseball mentality that we've seen his first couple of years in a Brewers uniform. Offensively, you know, specifically at looking at the stuff that he sees as, you know, at bat to at bat, there's no weakness here that you can see, right? 308 against fastballs, 308 against breaking balls, 286 against off speed, far less off speed than there has been the others. But then he's still slugging the fastballs, 5 of his 6 extra base hits on the fastballs coming into action here on Thursday. Strikeouts, everyone's going to strike out, no big deal. Whiff, it is what it is. You're going to face some nasty guys. But look at the difference on breaking balls last year versus this year, right? 213. Now, his WOBA 290 isn't that bad on breaking balls. His WOBA this year, 20 points better at 310. Very good. Now, the XBA, that brings in, you know, exit velocities and expected hits, and there is certainly some good luck in there, but that all levels out by the end of the season. That's certainly something encouraging to look at. And then the other thing I want to point out here on his Savant page is the fact that we're seeing him pull the ball, seeing him pull the ball with authority. And I know we've talked about a breakdown of Bryce Durang, how he has opposite field pop, he has pull side pop. William's never been a guy that's been, you know, excited to pull the baseball. But the two things that I'm excited to see if this can continue, I'm not saying it's going to be this sustainable, but he's currently at a 40% ground ball rate. You look at when he first arrived, right? 54, 53, 54. That's not great. Now, he lowered it last year, which is a good sign. Getting more balls in the air. The nerds will tell you get the ball in the air. Now, not all fly balls are equal, but what I am encouraged by William Contreras right now is not only is he pulling the ball in the air, he's hitting fewer opposite field ground balls. Now, he'll take them when he needs them. Like, he'll let the situation call for itself, kind of like it did on Wednesday night when he just squibbed one through the right side. That's a good time for an opposite field ground ball when you're facing a submarine right-hander. That makes sense. But having that number lower than it has been in previous years is certainly encouraging for William Contreras. And then finally, again, the no weakness thing. You look at the early returns on run value on a pitch-by-pitch basis. Yeah, he's seen 26 cutters. That's the only thing in the blue. Again, we're warning you. Small sample size. Don't overreact. But his plate discipline continues to be tremendous. He doesn't chase pitches out of the zone. His run value on pitches out of the zone is a +3 already at this point in the year. It was a +21 last year. His chase rate is 5 points better than league average. His zone swing rate is lower than what it's been in the past. He's comfortable taking a strike, but yet it's on par with league averages. So all of this is a very fancy, advanced way to say William is tearing the cover off the baseball right now. But again, when we look a little bit deeper at William these last few years, right, he hit 23 home runs back in 2024. If he gets back to the 20-homer plateau, that's a great sign for William given how much he dealt with last year. He still hit 17 homers dealing with an injured finger. And for William, this is somebody that is anchoring this lineup right now. This middle of the order, whether it be Terang leading off or Terang hitting second, you know, Terang, Bowers, and Contreras are the ones keeping things afloat right now. And Gary. I should put Gary in that boat as well. But you look at a day like today where they use the bunt to their advantage because, hey, they, you know, Patrick Corbin made them look silly. Sometimes that happens. I think that the Brewers certainly want a few of those at-bats back against Patrick Corbin. I don't think it was like he was suddenly becoming Sandy Koufax, but at the same time, sometimes you get a little over-anxious and a little excited. But the other thing I want to point out with William is the fact that, especially against lefties, you can feel pressure when you're facing left-handed pitching. It's kind of him and Gary being the thump right now against left-handed pitching. Now, he struggled against left-handed breaking balls. He did again today, too. But he's still somebody that, as the season goes on, is going to need to provide the thump against lefties until Churio comes back. Gary's playing time will slow down, too. But on a day like today where, you know, Greg Jones is starting, David Hamilton is starting against the lefty, Brandon Lockridge is the leadoff man, Luis Matos got out of the cooler and played in the game today, Contreras continuing to be an aircraft carrier. You know, we've used that adjective before, that just that saying, hey, if you can be an aircraft carrier, or a noun, I should say, I guess, now that I think about it, but you be the guy that can bring this lineup with you, that you're the guy that can get on base, create chaos, create ways in order to make sure that somebody's on base at all time, that when they do finally pop one, the Brewers have 6 3-run homers this year. That's not any surprise that Williams has been on base for a lot of them. And when we look at the league leaders right now here for hitting, when we look at some of the rate stats right now for on-base percentage, you would be shocked to see William Contreras and Bryce Terang. They're both in the top 20 right now. Bryce is at 425. William is at 411, so he's in 15th right now. And that's across Major League Baseball, not just the National League. Again, the carriers, Terang and Contreras, are the ones really rolling along with this team, and they're going to need to continue to do so moving forward. That's a quick little Brewers Weekly here for you as they get ready to hit the road for Miami and Detroit. Now, we will have post-game shows after each of the three games in Miami. We're going to be playing ball. They got a roof, so make sure you tune in for those. 6 o'clock on Friday, 3 o'clock on Saturday, and then 12:40, if I'm not mistaken, on Sunday. So keep an eye out for those first pitches and those podcasts as well. They are also on the 620 WTMJ YouTube page. That is going to do it for this episode of Brewers Weekly. Thank you for watching or listening. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.